friends, family, neighbors. I'm so glad you could join us once again for your favorite podcast, Strictly For My Neighbors, with your host, Madison Ray.
That guy, Ray.
And Dano B. Picasso.
And of course, our special guest for today, the one and only, Alan Juneau. Yes! Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could be here today.
I'm so glad to be here.
About to have a good time.
Yeah, we've been trying to sit down and talk with you for a minute.
But you know,
a minute and a half.
Scheduling conflicts.
Long overdue.
We all got responsibilities.
Tis the season.
All on one accord now.
That's right. That's right. So, Alan, we met so many years ago at a theater audition.
Yes. Shout out Tiffany Johnson.
That's right. Hey. Tiffany Johnson, Pyramid Theater Company.
I love Tiffany. Hey. I was going to put it out there.
All right.
I love her too. Space. I love her too. And it was instantly a vibe. Like we were in the waiting room waiting to do our auditions and we just started chopping it up and it was like, okay, we cool. And
sweet.
What was your experience?
Of that day?
If you want to, yeah, let's get into it.
Oh my goodness, that day. You know, I'm a pretty introverted person, so I was like, okay, how can I, you know, make friends or make community? I said, you know, let me go to this, see what the black people in Iowa are doing. I was like, okay, there's a black theater company. That's probably a good avenue to meet black people who are in the art scene. And, you know, introversion doesn't really translate well to acting, so.
Mm-hmm. Well.
But, you know, I was like, okay. But then I was like, listen to see your music. I was like, okay, you got some albums out? I was like, okay, I rock with it.
Hey, and, much appreciated.
And then you hit me up pretty soon after. It's like, hey, want to get to work? I was like, okay.
Let's do this thing. That's right.
More people and more people.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think it's like when you show up, it's like the world starts to open up. And that's exactly, it's like you're part of the tribe now, you and the family. Hmm. Like, yeah. just come along and we'll walk this path together as long as we can or as long as it feels right. And sometimes the vibe is just, it was just popping off. So I was like, yo, this the one. Let's kick it. But you said, how black folks in Iowa. So where are you from originally?
So I'm originally from the Omaha area, specifically the Velvet Outfit, but Omaha, for those of y'all not from Nebraska.
Now, I know Iowa and Nebraska has some static, but not here. For me, Omaha's another home. I love Nebraska.
I think the
like,
biggest thing
it's
I've
all
noticed
love.
Is that in Nebraska, we're Village Inn people, but y'all are really about Perkins.
But that's because the Village Inn here are mediocre at best. All the good ones closed.
You're right.
Facts.
It used to be dope.
Yeah, Village Inn in the 90s, you know, Baker Square in the 90s. Perkins didn't come up until all the other places closed down.
Yeah.
Or okay. Fell off.
Fulfill a need.
It's true.
You know? It Amazoned its way into the late night food game.
Yeah.
And now they love it. They be addicted.
Now they tolerate it.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
I don't like toleration.
In this dancery?
I wasn't ready.
I'm sorry, I almost died, homie.
I almost died.
I've been up since 8 this morning. I'm ready to.
So how did you get from Nebraska to Iowa, though?
So, when I graduated from high school, I went to Harvard University in the Boston area.
Hey.
I feel like that
was
really serendipitous because I wasn't really expecting to go. I applied to 3 colleges, one that was like 20 minutes from my house, one that was 40 minutes from my house, and then Harvard.
That's the long shot. I get it.
But, you know, when I got the acceptance to go, I was like, we going.
Yeah, you don't say no. Yeah.
Right.
And then, but you know, that was a lot. Wasn't that great at math, even though I was a math major. So by the time my senior year, job comes around, you know, the people who, you know, were doing well in classes are getting lots of job offers.
Of course.
I applied to many a place. I got one job offer in Des Moines, Iowa, at an insurance company. That's it.
Going to Des Moines.
Going to Des Moines. That's, yeah.
Shout out the insurance capital of the United
States.
That's
how they get you. Insurance.
Everybody works for a bank insurer, you know, like my mom did it. Like, I remember when I kind of come up into like firm adulthood, it was just like, what bank do you work for?
Yeah.
It was kind of like, which is kind of gross.
I did my time at Wells Fargo.
Right, yeah. I'm saying, like, everyone kind of does their bid. I haven't yet. Yeah. I'm a holdout. I'm holding on.
You'll make it.
I was a bank teller in New Jersey.
See?
I'm saying, everybody gets a turn. But in your time in Des Moines, what has been in your estimation in your few years being here?
I think one thing that I like is that I live in the actual city. So I think I told you I lived in Bellevue, which is like a suburb/military base of Omaha.
Right.
And so there really is like nothing there. Like there was like a skating rink that has since closed. Like when I go back home, when I would go back home over break, we would hang out at like Target or Walmart. Like that's all that's there.
Wow.
Being in Des Moines, it's close. Like, you know, I'm close to good food. It's not too far to do fun things, go to the movies or go skating, go to a concert. So I like that there's like things to do. And I think just also just kind of being just more independent, because, you know, kind of in a strict household, you know, had a pretty short leash, so really didn't do much. And I was like, okay, let me actually do things.
Say you outside.
See, you're, as all of us being Des Moines natives, you came at a good time, like having been here for 5 years. Prior to that, all of us would have told you that Des Moines was incredibly boring. shout out Madison for doing his part to help improve the scene.
Thank you.
But yeah, like you definitely came at a good time for growth, especially like in the arts, you know, expansion of people's point of view.
I'm not gonna hold you. When I like found out that I was moving to Des Moines, you know, there was something that gave me pause, but I said, I'm going to see it through. Because I was like Googling, basically pretty much Googled black people, Iowa.
He saw all seven of us. I know.
Right. So you saw our pictures and
we're on two pages of the pamphlet.
I did see a lot of Antoinette Stevens. So I saw
her. Period.
She was still doing things back then.
Yep.
And, you know, I think when I was like trying to figure out like what type of like people come through, and I was like, Dr. Umar Johnson at Corinthian Baptist Church.
I remember that. Oh, I remember that.
He did a book signing in a barbershop.
Watching that live.
He did a book signing in a barbershop.
Yeah, watching that live, though, was everything.
And I was like, this is the kind of people that I would bring it through? I saw it through.
There are a few of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of crazy, too, with the expansion, with, you know, because I was driving downtown the other day and I saw black Israelites on the street.
Oh, for real?
And I thought, like they're here. And I was like, man, to think I never even like imagined, like from the time, like I knew we've had Muslim and, you know, P5 percenters and people that study of the different faith, but I've never seen black Israelites here. I've only seen them in like major cities, say Chicago, New York City, so like, something of that. But I'm like,
that's the sign of the come up. Wait, y'all got Hotep niggas? Oh, you on the come up? Congratulations.
Oh, I'm out. Looking forward to getting roasted at Walmart.
The other thing that, so I remember when I came here, after I interviewed, I came in January, started looking for an apartment for when I moved. And I think I was also like, wow, the Martin Luther King Street is nice.
It's not bad. There's only one small about
got a Fuzzy's, a place.
Yeah, oh no, that's not no. Oh,
that's not,
ooh,
that's
okay.
The new
part. No, so hold up. That's not the real Martin Luther King.
Hold up.
So the real Martin Luther King. We were just so. I've talked about the young white coworker of mine who is interested in all things black, and we actually had a conversation about this. He's very anal retentive about like civil engineering and shit, and he had a problem. He's like, how come Martin Luther King goes from north to south and then stops and starts going from east to west? Well, east to west Martin Luther King was not originally Martin Luther King.
Sure wasn't.
Okay. Original Martin Luther King wasn't even originally Martin Luther King. It was Harding Road, right?
Oh.
And that shit went all the way down the Grand, we're turning the Fleur, going out to the airport.
Oh.
Yep.
So we've decided that that's stupid. We don't like streets breaking up. So we're going to rename the whole thing. Martin Luther King is going from basically Douglas all the way past the airport. Okay. There's Fleur is now that little offset side street that takes you from Fleur to downtown. Okay.
Yeah.
So that now that little part is Fleur. East to west, Martin Luther King is no longer Martin Luther King. That is now Rosa Parks Way. We need to give it to another black great person.
I agree.
But
I think that's lovely.
That shouldn't be the same street. It's two completely separate streets.
They are separate streets.
What if we give it to like one of our black
people?
Washington Carver.
No, because there's already Carver Way in Ames due to the fact that he went to Iowa State. We went over these points.
Well, since it intersects slightly with MLK, why not Malcolm X?
Yeah, Des Moines not ready for that.
Oh, that's fair.
Again, we thought about this. There was time and effort put into this. It's Rosa Parks Way.
Rosa Parks.
From here on out, spread that shit.
Parkway.
No, that's why we just said Rosa Parks Way. Okay, it's Rosa Parks Way. That's the name. Tell your friends.
We can get that petition started today.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, they just changed the Andrew Jackson to Mary Jackson School.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. We don't like that, Jackson.
We were going to give it to Coretta, but then it's like people are still going to call it King. I'm like, but Coretta, she deserves. She put up with a lot of shit.
That's right.
But then if we do that, then we got to expose Martin Luther King. I don't think Du Bois is ready for that either. You
know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. There are people who are ready for that. They're like, yes.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's why they're not ready for that. It'll be ammo for some
more,
shit that
more
we don't
tea,
need.
More dirt.
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. I mean, we already have parts of the state that don't even celebrate it or recognize right. his birthday.
So I don't have Juneteenth off
the holiday,
work.
So
that's true.
I remember where we went to school. We didn't have Martin Luther King Day, and I literally would not go to school.
Oh yeah,
me and they would be mad, yeah. And like I would have to have arguments with my professors as to why I'm not coming to school today.
Yep.
And then they'd look at me crazy, like. You realize that this is your responsibility to be in school, and I'd have to reply back with, you realize that niggas got ate by dogs and had to petition on buses
yes.
to get to where I could have the day off to not look at you for education for a day. I'm gonna be at home. Well, eating oranges, watching drum rock.
Adulthood, it's so specific. You know, we're talking about how, you know, the Du Bois gets you with like the bank or the insurance thing. Now as adults, you know, they're like, as corporate, we need to celebrate the Negro. So do you want to come in on your day off to like do some Martin Luther King thing?
Hey, you want to do some free work for us? You want to do some free work for us? Just, you know,
because
celebrate being black in America.
Get it? Get it? It's a throwback. Yeah. You like, you guys love throwbacks.
It's all cyclical.
It's the freedom for me.
So you say you came up in a strict household.
Mm-hmm.
Unpack that for me. What do you mean a strict household?
So, you know, some people grow up in military households. Some people grow up in clergy households. I grew up in both.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah.
You got a double whammy.
You're not super wild out here.
Well, maybe you asked the wrong questions.
Maybe that's none of my business.
I'm just thankful that I'm an introvert because, you know, there is another timeline where I'm like, you know, bump it. I pay my bills now as an adult. I can do whatever I want. And I do whatever I want. It's just not anything.
The stuff that you want isn't.
It's raising a cat. I do whatever I want. I'm eat this chicken.
Like, listen, we eat good.
Good.
Got to keep that protein up.
Good.
Those should be clean.
So, tell me more about the clergy. Like, I, as a child who spent many Sundays and Saturdays and Thursdays and Fridays and
I would also
revival on sometimes and all that. I grew up in Kojic and I was testing the waters and I was like, nah. She goes, okay, and she went without me, and that was an awakening for me. So I took that break, and then my family went AME, like St. Paul, you know them, and I joined the men's choir just to spend time with my granddad, and that like kind of got me back into church for a few years in high school. But I still like smoking weed, showing up to rehearsals, high and shit. Because, you know,
they sound good.
I was a troubled child. I'm a heathen. But growing up, yes, I spent many a day and night and afternoon driving and all that in the coach of church.
I'm just having thoughts because as someone who's like directed men's choir, they just always seem to be more difficult. So now I'm just like, you know,
100%.
Maybe they're just all high. I don't know.
I think I was the exception to that rule.
He's a different heathen. Okay, so yeah. they just really can't sing.
Well, no, yeah. Like, they all think they know everything. They don't take direction well. Yeah, they want to sing their own parts rather than the parts that are actually written on the paper because, like, well, I know this will sound good and been harmonizing since 1954, et cetera, et cetera. So, no, you're absolutely
outside
right.
Outside the barbershop.
There's no fire barrel in here, Brother Johnson. Like, what are we doing?
Jesus. But I think that's exactly it. That's the lineage.
Yeah.
Like, it's a jazz tradition that actually comes out of the church.
Right.
You know, it's that ability to think on the fly and use all of the sum of your knowledge in this moment to make the moment work. And I think that's also just why our music just slaps a little harder, because it's informed by real life as opposed to an imitation of like, oh, this is how jazz people play, right? No, we just live in.
The music itself is alive.
Exactly.
It's constantly
exactly
changing and moving and growing. And yeah, that's what makes it special. So.
I think I like the music. I think I like doing the music a lot. Mm. I think there were just some things where I was like, you know, it's not for me.
The people?
And I think also, just like, you know, just I think just being like emotionally safe, I think that's something that I prioritize now as an adult in my work, in my art, and everything. Because, you know, sometimes it's kind of wild. It's like, you know, play whatever, sing whatever. And then like the pastor, whether it's my dad or someone else, just being like, you know, and insert derogatory things about queer people.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think even like one time, you know, I think it was my daddy was saying, you know, I would never have like, you know, like a queer person like on my music ministry.
And how does that feel?
Clean. Well,
yeah. And a part of me was just thinking, like, on one of it was like, well, can I quit? Like,
here's my resignation. Yes, you said. Yeah.
How do you follow people? How do you like follow behind them like that when you bring your list into shit like that? Because I would be petty. Like, my skill set would be immediately to go into petty moments to start twinkling and whistling things in the back of the van. Like, I would just, I don't know, it'd be just the most pettiest shit I could ever think of to try to do while you're giving your sermon.
Talk about it.
See, that crossed my mind, but I didn't want to get a whooping.
There it is.
But you know, I think, you know, as an adult, you know, what's an adult gonna do? Like, what am I behind? I think at that point, you know, I think it's just, you know, I think what, again, whether it's work or art, just the discernment to get up from the table where love is no longer being offered.
Mm. Ooh, that's a whole word. Yeah. I'm saying
everybody talks about a seat at the table, but like it's so like bold of people to assume that their tables got good food. I mean,
You right. Most of these tables are dingy as fuck.
Dude, they prepared with the best of hands.
But I'm saying.
Who made the potato salad?
Because I wasn't eating it anyway.
Yeah. So, you know, part of it, you know, it's one thing to like, you know, look as a child and be like, you know, I was a child. I didn't have say so. But, you know, I'm an adult now. But, you know.
Yeah, really.
Has your experience through the church affected your like relationship with spirituality? Like, where do you find reconciliation between your spiritual self, your creative self, and like your honest self based on those experiences?
Yeah, I think a part of it, I do think, you know, going, you know, to Boston, coming here to Des Moines, you know, away from Nebraska, I think it was nice to have some space to just, you know, really hear what I'm saying, hear what I'm thinking, and to not be so distanced from my thoughts and feelings. I think it also has been beneficial for me to see a lot of people of different backgrounds who are also spiritual people, who are also like specifically Christian people, that aren't just my nuclear family unit. Whether it was the church I went to in Boston, the church I go to now, just different like black queer clergy people that, you know, I've connected with on the internet, just be like, you know, you can be authentically you and also like have a thriving spiritual life.
Yeah, I want to unpack it a little bit further. That space of, you know, the big topic, I want to say 5 years ago, is about intersectionality, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you talk about blackness and queerness and the fact of like what happens when you occupy both of those spaces. Mm-hmm. And especially when we come out of such a conservative like church and spiritual tradition, not just being able to reconcile that, but then what does the future of like black spirituality look like in this country as there's more of this intersectionality and creating more spaces for queer black people to actually exist as their authentic selves, as opposed to just being buried in the choir somewhere,
right?
Or like, oh, like, you know so and so, but we don't really talk about them, da 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 da, you know, as those traditions are clearly dying out. What do you think the future of black spirituality looks like?
I've definitely seen a lot of African American people reclaiming hoodoo, because I think there is a lot of overlap between hoodoo and Christianity. And I think, I don't know, I think I've also just thought about just people, whether they're Christian or Muslim or whatever. A part of me somewhat thinks that everything just goes in cycles. Because I think one of the things that, you know, has been unfortunate about Christianity is how they've weaponized these things. Like, you know, you just need to, like, think yourself out of depression. You just need to think yourself out of these type of things. But then, you know, you get on TikTok with all of these, you know, people who, you know, maybe just not Christian, more like crystals or whatever, and they say, you just didn't manifest hard enough. And that's why you're depressed. So it almost just seems like, regardless of what your spiritual path is, just maybe moving forward, just thinking more critically in general, using it to just to thrive and not to just beat people up, Christian or otherwise.
Yeah. You know that, so I took one of those like music ethnography classes back in the day, you know, where you're doing all the research and you're looking at these things, the comparative, you know, like it's like all of that like intellectual music history type shit. And I remember we had gotten to like, and I hate this phrase, African music, you know? Let's just shrink down an entire continent and human history into a chapter. You can guess the rest. But what was really fascinating was actually watching film of some of the like tribal rituals compared to like Southern Baptist churches, and how a lot of those traditions exist under the radar. So while there's praising of a new God, the music didn't change, the service didn't change, the culture actually didn't change. It just took on a new figurehead to survive in this country. And I think there's a bit of that kind of awakening to that for another generation, for like the Gen Zs are like realizing, oh right, this is deeper. And because the internet gives us much more access to these stories and these histories, it's like, oh, then let me just get back to basics and find something that's a little more accurate to my experience, my culture, my belief system that rejects, you know, white Jesus on the cross. I think that's really fascinating. Like there's those parallels and similarities where it's like you're already doing the thing, just change the names, you know?
Yeah. Which I mean is kind of how Christianity
literally is. Literally. Like, yeah. Do what you're doing.
But we're just gonna throw some Jesus.
Sprinkle some Jesus on. Jesus. That to say, I've always admired your ability to see a goal and then just go after it. And then make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, thank you.
Like you, speaking of manifesting, which is the funniest thing, it's like you are a manifester. Whether, you know,
you do dope stuff.
Like just different there pieces of your life where you're just like, I'm going after this thing and we're just gonna go do that. Mm-hmm. You've run an episode of Wheel of Fortune, and that was amazing. Yeah. Like we watched it together. I was in Alan's apartment, like watching the thing, having some pizza and the whole thing, and it was so dope. Like just to see somebody go and do the things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's not just talk. It's not just, oh, I'd love to do this someday or some pipe dream.
I'm in LA.
Right. Like, right. I'm going to LA. I'm going to go try to win some money on Wheel of Fortune. Cool. Support. Done. Or then I saw you go be a bodybuilder. Like, I think I'm just going to go walk this path for a while. Yeah. Life as a bodybuilder, going from, so you've got academia, you've got music, you've got church, and now you're a gym rat. Now you're putting on muscle and smashing entire chickens. Like, yeah, it's no big deal.
Led to the decision.
Like right.
What, and not even necessarily even just with bodybuilding, like what leads you to these adventures that you like to go on? Like how do you make these decisions for what you're gonna do next?
Oh God.
Big question. Big question. Break it into small bites.
Sometimes I mean, I'm just like in some ways I just think I'm like really easily impressed or like easily excited. Like, wow, I think that'd be so cool. I wanna do it. And you know, when I see bodybuilding, like when I first got into it, I really didn't really know all about posing, all of that. I was like, they have six pack, that looks so cool. I want to do that. Yeah, or like, you know, with Wheel of Fortune, I was like in my dorm room in my apartment, and I was just applying for a bunch of game shows, and one of them I couldn't do because I had like an internship, and you know, I was like, I need guaranteed income. But then I was like, yeah, Wheel of Fortune, that'd be so cool, you know, be on a game show. And I guess to bodybuilding, I think that's something in particular because I like that there's like photographic evidence that I did these things, not just like for the vanity aspect of it, because I'm like, wow, this actually happened. This was an incredibly hard thing to do. And like workouts, like they're hard. Like having the same thing and like not going out to eat with friends all the time, like that's hard. But then sometimes like, I don't know, I forgot it was like a coach or something, but it was like it's not supposed to be easy. Like, it's challenging for a reason.
Yeah. Right.
Like, if it was easy,
everybody would do it.
Yeah.
We all have abs. Yeah. I don't want abs. Yeah. I love donuts so much. There's no way. There's no way I can break up. Listen, that biscuit walks to the door. Fuck these abs. Listen,
the biscuits.
You gonna rub on with everybody you get.
Baby, win the lights. Go out.
Oh my lord. So to navigate queerness in gym spaces, what was that experience like? Was that even an experience?
Gosh. So I guess just for context, if folks don't know, the first time I competed in bodybuilding, I competed in bikini bodybuilding. And then the second time I competed in men's physique bodybuilding. Mm. So the first time I competed in bikini bodybuilding, I was actually like surprised, pleasantly surprised with how homoerotic everything is. Mm-hmm. Okay. I was like, wow.
That's
toast,
bro.
Lots of ass.
Look at all this ass.
A lot of ass.
You know, because, you know, I was on a team at the time, you know, just had, like, you know, the men and women, you know, practicing posing together, workout together, and just, like, you know, getting, like, critique on your posing. And it's just very just methodical. Like, you know, you need your butt more this way. You know, poke your butt out this way. You're like, you know, like, oh, my goodness. Like, abs look good, bro. Like, I don't know. I'm like, wow. Mm. And then just, like, you know, all hot and sweaty, just everything.
Everyone's oiled up. Looking extra bronzed. Everyone's your color for some reason.
Oh my god! Because I just the bodies. Times, I forgot, like the day before, then the day of, like even me, just because of the stage lights, you have to go get tanned, and because you know there's a lot of competitors, you know I gotta get tanned. And basically, it's like a bunch of like naked people you're about to from the rooter to the tutor, just like naked. Booty bone naked, getting tanned, spray tanned and everything, and then you know you can't just like tan to go. You gotta like wait to dry.
Right. And so we're just sitting around naked.
Dry all these parts. Dry sitting there with my balls, bro.
So then you like doing the muscle poses while you're drying. You can't because you might mess up that elbow part or something.
Your lines right. No creases. Yeah. Just like my sneakers. Exactly. No creases. Yeah.
Tell the truth. Excuse me.
So what did you learn from bodybuilding? If there was one big lesson that you took away from that experience.
I would say intentional and deliberate action will take you farther than just talent. It will take you farther than just having a goal.
The genius of hard work.
Think about when you know you think people who are training for the Olympics or people who, you know, the NBA Finals going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Go Celtics.
I think everybody has the goal to win the game. So I don't think people have a problem with setting goals at all.
You're right.
Like I think, you know, why New Year's happens and, you know, New Year's happens, people make great, great, great goals. So I think that everybody is like A+ in making goals. But what are you actually doing towards it? Like, you know, we want to win the basketball game, but you take, but maybe a more deliberate thing, I'm going to work on our jump shot. We're going to make it a goal to have better jump shots. And then you're in the game and you are actually having, you're making your shots. You're probably going to win the game. Then if you just set the goal, like, I just want to win the game. How? Like,
what is your tactic?
Practice makes proficient.
Huh.
It's true.
The hardest week of all is like the week leading up to it. Because at this point, like, you're like incredibly, incredibly hungry. Like, you barely have any body fat on you. Like, your immune system, like, you're just a very, very delicate human being at this point. And you just really, really need to push through in order to get on the stage. Like, you can't let up, like, literally until like that night. And I think my takeaway from that is to stop starting and to start finishing things. Like it really is how you finish. Because I don't know, like myself included, like even just me, it's easy to start things. Be like, oh, I'm gonna try this. But I don't know, I think like the money is in finishing things.
Yo, I need to hear that today.
For sure.
Yeah. The follow through is so important. It's so, so important. You know, I think a lot of my success lies in that, like, I'm known as the dude who gets shit done. You know, it's like, we going to get there. One way or another, we going to get there.
Facts.
We going to have a thing.
That's something that I appreciate about you.
Oh, thank you.
Like, you know, I would say a strength about you is, like, you're going to see things through to completion. Like, you know, I think, you know, sometimes people can just like tarry forever, just, oh, just, you know, just perfectionist, we're never going to be done. And there's like, you know, like, this is the deadline. This is, we're going to get it done by this deadline.
I'm going to put it out here for anybody, any creatives that are listening, that encouragement of like, completion does matter. That, you know, part of the work is how do you push past your own like sense of perfectionism or whatever those hurdles can be. Sometimes they're emotional, sometimes they're like literal and they're physical things. But the thing is, like, it's important to get to a state of completion, because that is the true act of creation. Everything that's in, just inside your head, like, it doesn't change the world until it's manifested outside. And even if it doesn't fit the vision to a T, that it still can do the work by existing outside. You know, there is merit in creation. And the people will decide what it means to them.
I guess I'm just really grateful and fortunate to be in a place where I'm okay with and can afford to fall on my face. Because, like, not everything I do is good. Or, like, it's, like, well-received. And, you know, just being able to just, like, to bounce back from it. Just to be, like, you know, come hella high water, we're going to do this thing.
Yo, can we unpack this for a second? Because this is something we've talked about for years. Yeah. And the topic is black mediocrity. Mm. Right? Can we give ourselves the grace and the space to just be okay at shit? And also sometimes not good at things. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Where do we have the space? Can we have the space to just like... But we have this thing of like, we can only be excellent. I don't know. Let's talk about it.
I feel like black people can only be mediocre if they have a solid fallback plan.
Facts.
Mm-hmm. That's why I said grateful to be positioned.
Yeah.
Like, and afford
exactly.
to follow my
face. Yeah. Mm. Like, you got to almost be comfortably middle class, like, as is, before you can afford to be mediocre.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Facts. Because that fake until you make it shit's not going to work too much no more.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I saw this like illustration the other day. You know how when you like go to the arcade and they have like those like, you know, like get the ball in the hoop sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think about like if you have like poor people, they can like maybe the rich, like super rich people, they can like throw balls and balls and then like just throw, keep on throwing balls, and then eventually one's gonna hit the hoop, and then they can see like, see, you just have to work for it. And then you get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, maybe a middle class person, they can buy so many tokens and they have so many shots, and a few of them are going to get it in there. And mm-hmm. that's like the rags to riches.
Yeah.
And then you have people who can't afford to, they're working at the arcade.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, what a perfect analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of breaks my heart a little bit.
Shout out Chuck E. Cheese.
So like,
shit.
So I'm not to like not too much on entrepreneurs, but like entrepreneurship, you do have to have vision. And like, I feel like sometimes it's overstated, because sometimes, I mean, if you have a lot of chances to get things right, odds are you're going to get it right eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially like black entrepreneurship, a lot of these people, like, there's always sayings where it's like, there's enough for everybody to go around, but that's not necessarily true. So you have a lot of these people who are in here, out there in the workforce doing 40 hours a week, and then they might take 5-10 hours a week on the side to do their little entrepreneurial thing, but it's nothing great versus that person who's going to sink everything they have into it and grind it out.
That's right.
And, you know, see what can come of it. So that's a hard one. But yeah, I fully stand by, you can't be black and mediocre unless you're already...
So you argue that a level of achievement and greatness has to establish and afford the ability to not be so great.
Yeah.
I think that it's okay to be mediocre. And I don't know, I think sometimes I have to remind myself is that where I am today doesn't have to be where I am maybe like 2 weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I don't know, like, you know, I think a part of like, I don't know, self-love and whatever, is like loving myself. Like, I love myself exactly the way I am, like right now in this moment, like flaws and all. And like, what's just a small thing that I can do just to be like incrementally less mediocre? Like, not like the end picture, just like just a little bit.
Yeah.
See, that discipline is what will land you solidly in that rags to riches category too.
Ooh, yeah.
You know? So I had a little bit of success, and it was when I was being intentional in my practice. I was drawing every day.
Facts.
I was
working at it every single day.
We miss you. Put that pen to paper, dog. I mean, we miss you.
This shit is done. But no, when I was being intentional and like was every day, like the kids would go to bed, I would go downstairs to my office, I would pull out my pens and paper and I would do that shit.
Yeah.
And like I got an art show out of it and I was selling stuff. I was getting like some supplemental income and shit like that. And now, but also for a bit, I feel like I went too hard because like in anything, like you lose passion for it. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're going too hard and that's when I had to stop and realize, like, am I doing this for me still, or am I doing this because I'm trying to get something out of it? Because when I'm trying to get something out of it, I lost the joy for it. And so when I go back to doing it for me, then it's still fun. But now, I mean, even to this day, when I'm going and picking up the paper, it's like, am I enjoying what I'm doing? Because if not, I mean, my work suffers for sure. Or like I have to be in a certain mood for it, or you know, like there's all these excuses and shit. But like when it comes down to it, am I making something that I can be proud of? And I am comfortably middle class. You know what I'm saying? So at this point, it's a choice for me. Like if I don't want to do it, I don't have to do it, and I'm gonna be just fine. And then if I want to do it and I'm enjoying it, then it's gonna be, not to toot my own horn, but I feel like far above average. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, the work that I have put in over the years is still in there. And it's just up to me as far as whether or not I want to put in the time to continue to grow.
Sure.
But again, that level of comfort I have in my life makes that a choice. I'm not out here grinding out of necessity. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
sure,
if I want to go do the shit, I can go do the shit. If I don't, then I can just go to work tomorrow. You know?
Like, yeah. I thought about it. Because, like, yeah, I was saying, like, comfortably in middle class. I'm like, you know, if I'm thinking of us, like, long term, I'm like, okay. I'm a black queer person in the United States, so things might hit the fan, you know, and it takes money to relocate anywhere, much less internationally. And then just, you know, family planning is expensive, especially for like queer family planning.
I can't imagine.
I'd like to be a father someday, so yeah. I'm just like, and you know, if I want to be a father and, you know, they keep on like doing all these things for trans people, I need some money to go. It might be comfortable to be middle class today, but will it continue to be so?
Yeah.
No. The way things are going.
Right.
Not to be that guy.
Yeah, I'm that guy.
Yeah, right. So yeah, to speak on like the queer and trans experience, especially in black spaces. What, have you been able to find community? Have you been able to find fellowship? Like, what has your experience been?
So I'd say as far as like black, trans, masculine folks in particular, I'd say like the vast majority of that community has been on the internet, like on Twitter, on Instagram. I think one of the dopest connections I made like super early on in the pandemic was with this guy named Sean Stinson. I saw him in a documentary that was on Amazon at the time. And he is a black man of trans experience who's also a bodybuilder. And so I connected with him pretty early in the trans pandemic. And just like his perspective, just on very like trans specific things like surgery and things like that, but also just life experience to, you know, connect with, you know, folks who are, you know, in their 40s who, you know, have life experience, and I guess also he's like has like business experience, like music experience, like had like a whole like thriving DJ business, but then said, I want a family, don't want to be out late, I'll pivot to like personal training.
Sure.
And
like sure.
Bodybuilding. Yeah. And just life experience I think is really important, because it's one thing to like see your peers, but I think it's, I don't know, I appreciate being able to talk to folks who like, you know, have more life experience.
I mean, I know a lot of people like bitch and complain about like, yeah, doom scrolling. I mean, this shit's real.
Yeah.
But it's also a tool that it's like any other tool. Like, I can take a hammer and I can build a house, but I can also break a house, you know? And so like, I feel like you get what you kind of put into it. So if you're in that kind of mindset to doom scroll, that you're only going to find shit that makes you more miserable. However, you can also find camaraderie and support. Sometimes you can find money. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Mentorship. All of these really beneficial human things that allow us to have those spaces to actually grow and flourish. I think it's a really beautiful thing, because it's like that's something that like our our forebears just did not have.
Especially because, you know, I think they're like, you know, that's the thing, like black queer, black trans people specifically, because, you know, kind of, I think earlier you just saying how like with blackness and queerness, sometimes people try to position them as like mutually exclusive categories. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's not predominantly black queer spaces and all of the things that come with that. Not too much on the messiness in Des Moines, but and they're even just like, you know, in black space.
Yeah, in general, I mean, like black people as a whole are fairly homophobic, like queerphobic. That's something that we gotta like fight through as a community. Mm. Part of that being rooted in religion, part of that being rooted in like the need for hypermasculinity. Like,
but I want to challenge that a little bit. I want to offer another perspective to that conversation. It's what you're saying is relevant. Yeah. I think it's both things are true here. So okay. It's this and what I'm about to say. That I think there's also, it's not that niggas ain't trying to do better. It's just that like education is a part of the conversation. Oh, and I think there's just an education curve of like, okay, so if you're talking to people who use exclusively niggas and bitches as their pronouns, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's how you got to understand that you're speaking the language. You need to be able to code switch that. So if someone only thinks in terms of niggas and bitches, like they're going to use the vocabulary that they have to try to explain what they're experiencing.
I feel like
and
you're sticking up for Kendrick Lamar right now.
But a little bit. But the thing is, but there has to be grace to learn.
No, for sure.
And to say, like, you're not actually coming from a hateful place. You're just using outdated terminology or that you're working through it, and there has to be some grace to like understand what's actually being said and that there's room to improve.
Yeah.
Well, but because I think sometimes, and I'll finish my point and then I'll move on, but like I think sometimes the backlash then creates a conservative response, mm-hmm. right? To go, you'd be in transphobic, you're homophobic, you just keep saying niggas and bitches and da 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 da. Yeah. And it's like, well, fine, if that's what I'm going to be, then fuck all of you and fuck everybody.
No, you're absolutely.
So then, if that's what I'm going to be, then yeah, fuck these niggas, fuck these bitches, whatever.
That's
and so I think sometimes it's more of just a knee-jerk reaction because someone's being rejected as opposed to being like welcomed in and going, okay, I see you're trying to do better, then let's have some conversations so you can actually do better.
Right. Hasn't niggas been a gender neutral name anyway?
Right, yeah. Right. Like some of that shit is not even about gender whatsoever. Like, yeah. I called a light post a nigga this morning. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Nigga all the time. I think facts.
Where maybe as much as I love like, you know, making friends on the internet and, you know, finding digital spaces, I think that this one shortcoming is the ability to build trust. You know, I feel like community sometimes gets thrown out just as like unfortunately as a buzzword, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we're community. Mm-hmm. But are we, do we have that established trust?
No.
Because I think that where there is that trust, you can lean into those conversations and feel like it's coming from a place of love. Because I think that's something that I try to look for is how I feel and intent and where the disconnect is. Because, you know, I think that there are some people who, you know, they might slip up on, you know, pronouns or names or something, but, you know, it's all love because we have that trust to know that, and, you know, you also like a, you know, a resolve to do better. And there are some people who, like, they might have the pronouns correct in name only,
mm-hmm.
but really don't care about you.
Right.
That, you know, that I mean that on the micro level, but even on the macro level, like, come on, Democrats, like, you know, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, something, you know, I think like less about, you know, like character, like we need a, like a trans American girl, or we need a trans Disney character. I think it's more so just about like those micro interactions, like do we have the trust to, like, you know, whether it's gender or sexuality or just like anything that's, you know, life,
mm-hmm.
like do we got each other?
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to. And that's why I say sometimes you need a little more grace for folks like, nah, like this is like, because I've seen folks who are like allies get into a fight just because like mixed terminology.
That's why.
Crossed lines. People just didn't understand each other, so now they're fighting.
That's why I try to stay out of comment sections nowadays if I really don't know the person, because I'm like, we really don't have a rapport.
Mm-hmm.
So like, even if like what they're saying is whack, like what's it coming from me? Like I can do is like hope that there's someone in that circle who can like, you know,
Even then, like, that comes down to, like, shit is exhausting. Like, as a like, black cisgender, like, male, like, I know how exhausting it is to try and make, like, white allies feel better about shit going on with black people and, like, educating them. And sometimes I just don't want to do that shit.
Sure.
So I can only imagine adding, like, the queer element onto it, too, like, in trying to educate people. Like, is it really my... When does it stop being my job to educate you and it's your job to educate yourself?
But it's what Alan said. It's about trust. Like, maybe us talking, we can talk all day.
Yeah.
But, like, if just some rando comes up and goes, hey, bro, tell me about the... Fuck off. Yeah, get the fuck out of my face.
I don't trust many people.
Because I've been put in those situations. Yeah. Hey, come over to my house. We're going to have dinner. Da, 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 da. And then I get cornered on some, like...
Same.
So, you know I'm a good one, right?
Yeah.
Not anymore.
I voted for Obama twice.
Right. Exactly. So, and so...
I'll just put an example. You know, you could probably take this at home with you. But, you know, sometimes, you know, a question... that someone will be like, you know, like, what's an appropriate question to ask a fill in the blank?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, like, you know, is it appropriate to ask a trans person if they've had all the surgeries?
Mm-hmm.
There's a book answer, but I'd say the question that won't steer you wrong, if you have to ask, you probably shouldn't ask.
Yeah. That's not your business. If there's a question of if it's appropriate, yeah. The answer is it's probably inappropriate.
No, that's not your business.
Don't do it.
I'm willing to exhaust myself for this conversation because I love you.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. And I think that comes from real camaraderie, real trust, real friendship. Because I can always suss out immediately if someone's coming at me with something sincere,
mm-hmm.
or if they're just trying to do that performative thing because they need to check that box and they're like, hey.
Yeah.
How are you feeling after the blah, 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 blah current event?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. How should I react to this in other circles?
You leave me alone with that shit.
You know, I feel like there are a lot of articles on how to talk to your black coworkers after a tragic event happens. Yeah. They need to have an article for how to respond to your white coworkers who read the article about your black coworkers. Because I'm like, how...
The think piece about the think pieces. It's the never ending.
I can write that motherfucker right now. Avoid.
I'm calling in sick.
Avoid.
So what's up? What's coming up next? What's 2023 looking like for Alan Juneau?
2023. I'll still be in school at Berkeley working on my master's.
Hey.
But also from the music education, I would say that's probably the big thing now. Lately, I've been spending a lot of time working. So I started last year teaching one-on-one private lessons for piano.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it occurred to me, I have only so many hours in the day. I can only teach piano to so many students. So I was like, okay, I have a lot of knowledge to share. Why don't I just film this and make online courses? Because, you know, I feel like there are a lot of people who try to learn piano on their own. They'll maybe go on YouTube, but there's like videos everywhere. Like, mm-hmm. you're like, if you're a beginner, you're intermediate, like, where do I begin? So, like, what if I make a course that can, like, at least have, like a guided path to, like, lead you somewhere and, like, you know, not just learn the song, but also learn the theory that'll help you learn other songs as well. And so I'm planning to release my first R&B course this year, and so next year I'll be continuing to refine that.
Nice.
Possibly have some more courses.
That's so dope.
Yeah,
that is amazing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Sign up and support. Yeah. Where can our listeners follow along or sign up and get classes?
So courses.alanjuneau.com.
Courses.alanjuneau.com. Love to see it.
Yeah.
If you get lost, alanjuneau.com.
Right. just plug the name.
Courses.
We still there waiting for you.
Any new songs coming out? Any new projects?
Well, I think there has to be because so I am
required.
I feel like there's like actually like a financial incentive for me to do this because there's a music startup now called Musiversal. Their whole thing is democratizing the recording space and allowing people to work with world-class Grammy award-winning musicians from their home and have recording sessions.
Nice.
June 1st, so I had their membership to release a song and it worked really well, but I was like, it's kind of, you know, I don't know if I can like swing $99 a month, so I'm living pause. But then in May, they made an announcement that they reached another level of startup funding or whatever, and they said, effective June 1st, If you don't have a membership, the prices are going up to like $1,300 a year, and you get far less. But if you are an existing customer, you can still have like $99 a month, and you're like, you know, your credits can roll over. So I said, I guess I better swing this $99.
Right. We're going to hold on to this one for a little bit longer.
And they expire like after like 6 months. So like I would say at least within the next 6 months, if for no other reason than to get my money's worth.
That's right. That's right. There will be music. You know, actually, when you think about it, like, when you think about what those costs do look like, $99 a month is a steal. You know, like, I mean, when you think about what studio time costs.
The mixer and masterer, like, has literally won Grammys for...
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, those engineers, yeah, are very expensive. And to have access to them for this kind of, like, low threshold is... Just like, well, not to say that $99 a month is not expensive, comparatively, and like the savings have to be like, exponential.
Like, a little bit more, you can actually like work with like full orchestras.
Oh my goodness!
So I'm like, you know, well, let's just say that I also, in addition to being a member, I invested some money in them because I'm like, this seems. I mean, I had a great experience recording my first single. Being in my jammies.
Plug the single.
Like, it's called The Gift of Life. I was in my jammies. I joined the Zoom call. I like did, you know, said, do it like this, blah, 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 blah. You know, sent the lead sheets or whatever. That was a great experience. I would love to have more experience, especially with all this metaverse, da, 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 da. And, you know, let me invest a few dollars. You know, this could be like the Amazon of music or something.
It could be, hey.
And if it's not the Amazon of music, well, I like it for me. And you know, Warren Buffett said something: invest in things you know. I know them. I like them.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Nice.
I respect. That's why I bought Nike stock.
I mean, support things you buy. You know what I mean? Yeah,
but it's also like in like 2023. You know, someone said that, you know, it's one thing to, you know, want to do good things for yourself, but, you know, I said it's great to be an opportunity where you can like make opportunities for your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, my goal for this year is to launch my online course asynchronous, people do it on their own time, let it happen. I say for 2023, I said I want to have an option, because some people, they really do like live in support. I said, what if I could just have a course attend, mm-hmm. and have this course, we meet once a week, we work through it, you know, we have these things going on. But I'm like, what if there's more than 10 people that want to take this thing? Then that's an opportunity for another music homie who knows how to do piano.
That's right.
Teach the same course
to
more people.
That's how so many of our creative industries work. A little here's the major keys, you know, is like, really, it's part of it's why the network is so important, is because opportunity comes to a point where like your plate will be full.
Yeah.
And so then you pass on those things to someone else's plate, and then their plate gets full. And it just keeps kind of feeding itself, where it's like, I'll take on as much work as I can until I can't, and I'm gonna give it to a homie who can. And that's really part of the thing of why it's so important to plug in, to engage, to be present, and to be ready, is because you're exactly right. There comes a point where you're like, I can't do this alone. Somebody else needs to take this, and then they can make their money and get their clientele and get their projects and da 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 da. It takes community.
So, I'm sure y'all saw the backlash that Walmart faced for their niggerific ice cream coming out.
Barely.
Was supposed to
come out. Shit.
So, basically, I guess my beef is with the adoption of Juneteenth as a national holiday.
Okay.
So, Juneteenth in and of itself, for us, I feel like is important. Okay, like the idea of it itself for us is important. It's one of those things where I kind of feel like white people should just not be invited to the cookout, because Juneteenth itself is also kind of problematic. Like,
oh, absolutely,
the sheer fact that we're celebrating the fact that the last niggas to know they were free happened 2 years after they were free is an issue.
Like, should white people really be celebrating this?
No.
It's the freedom, like, for me.
Yeah, like, you're celebrating the fact that you got away with owning niggas for 2 years longer than you were supposed to. And now you're going to make and throw in my face red velvet and cheesecake ice cream along with banners and paper plates and paper cups and fucking noisemakers and fucking Congress wearing kente cloth and all this, that, and the other. And I'm supposed to be happy and appreciative for a potential day off work for y'all celebrating yet again your mediocrity.
It's the freedom for me.
Free-ish. Free-ish. And I'm over it. Like, how dare you? How dare you? And then, on top of that, not even all jobs are given the day off. I still got to be at work on Juneteenth. But my significant other, who works for a big bank, who has flat out been caught not giving loans to niggas, is giving y'all the day off for Juneteenth.
It's the freedom for me.
Free-ish. And I'm over. I can't do it. And I can't. If I swear to God, if one person comes up to me and tells me happy Juneteenth, I'm slapping them, because that should be a get out of jail free day. Like, if the cops were to ask me about slapping this person, I'm telling them, like, hey, listen, they wished me a happy holiday for some shit that they were 2 years late on. Like that'd be like somebody coming up to me and being like, happy 34th birthday. Where were you 2 years ago?
Sir, why did you slap?
Because they deserved it. Reparations.
It's the freedom for me.
It's the freedom for me.
I thank you, because I wanted to put it there, but I didn't want to do it because I felt like it was no longer my responsibility.
Yeah. Passed the torch there. It's the freedom for me to say y'all can kiss my ass on Juneteenth. I'm gonna say whoever I want to, and I'm gonna celebrate it how I want to, and the damn sure ain't gonna be with no nasty ass red velvet and cheesecake ice cream. I'm not gonna do it. thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Fuck y'all.
This is the part of the show where we play a game with our guests called This or That. We're going to ask some lightning round style questions to our guest, Alan Juno. And Alan has to choose this or that. There's no option C. You got to choose. We ask the hard questions. So, who wants the first round of This or That?
I'll actually start with that.
Okay.
Relatively easy. You had mentioned that Iowa is about Perkins over Village Inn. But even within that sect, there's a small group of people who are wrong. I'll let you give your opinion before I tell you which one you are. Perkins or IHOP?
Perkins.
Okay, you're right. Just making sure. The offense on your face made me feel better about it.
Yeah. What if Joaquin?
Like, the fact that you look so disgusted with that question.
How dare you? The audacity that you even compare these two.
You know, like, IHOP's, like, I don't go to Denny's before I go to IHOP. Like, that's like the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah.
See, I don't know. It's the freedom for me. IHOP. Trying to rebrand for because they have burgers too, you guys.
And people get mad at trans people for changing names.
No.
Like, mama goes, I'm gonna
call you IHOP.
That one hurt my ribs. Yeah. That one hurt my ribs.
All right, I hope all the questions are that easy.
Make no promises.
Yeah, he's only responsible for his questions. True. This or that, the Garden or the Blazing Saddle?
So I haven't been to the new Garden location. I've only driven past it.
Oh, they moved?
They did.
Yeah, they're in the East Village now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what's so.
And they're actually down the street and around the corner from the Blazing Saddle.
I also saw that they weren't doing anything with Pride this week. Like, I was looking at the at the list, and their name was nowhere on it.
Right. Different ownership. Less egos.
Fair enough.
Bingo.
I'm sorry. Go
ahead.
So I don't know if it is. So I can only speak to my experience of, like, the old Garden. So I have none about new Garden.
Mm.
So on that alone, I'd have to say the Saddle, because that's the only, like, place I've been to.
The one that's still open. This is the one that clearly won the fight.
I can't speak good or bad of a place I ain't been to.
Fair.
Fair. I appreciate the honest answer, but yes.
If it was old Garden, it would be Blazing Saddle. Yeah.
Yeah. Still, Blazing Saddle wins.
Would you rather lead for a men's choir...
Like lead, direct?
Yeah, like lead and direct for a men's choir, or lead and direct for a new generational church.
you know, more diverse than just, you know, us. So say, for instance, you had a kind of a multicultural section of worship rather than...
Church that only lasts an hour.
So for the audience, whenever you see a church that says multicultural, diverse, when push comes to shove, it's going to be like... to the white.
There's gonna be seven black people there.
Yeah. Yeah, the common denominator is whiteness.
I say this because my dad was pastor of several churches. One of them was a multicultural So as someone who has led a men's choir and has led a multicultural diverse church, I'm gonna choose a men's choir. At least I can make sure I put a spin on, because I'm like, how come you always go for like Blind Boys of Alabama? Like, why'd you ever do like Boys to Men? Like, I don't know. Those were boys, the guys' groups too.
But they don't sing like they used to.
It's crazy because they'd be saying shit like that, but like, they're older than you.
Yeah.
What do you mean like they used to? They're older than you.
Okay. All right, here's another trash food one because they're both like mediocre. Wingstop or Buffalo Wild Wings?
I can't die.
No, this or that.
I'm going to choose Buffalo Wild Wings.
Wow.
Because
you can get something other than wings.
That's right.
You know, because Wingstop, it's like wings and fries.
Or thighs.
Yeah.
Or thigh bites.
Thigh stop.
The fuck is a thigh bite? Hold up.
Fried corn.
What is a thigh bite? What is a thigh bite?
So, like, you know, I think, so you remember the wing shortage?
Yeah.
To, you know, do their part in the wings shortage, if you were like ordering online,
I don't like this.
They would have like thigh stop, basically.
I don't like this at all. So it's nuggets, like, mad thighs.
Thigh stop, like title of my sex tape, like thigh stop.
So basically, so they would just take the piece of the thigh without the bone. So they like.
Okay.
And then,
sure.
You know, because also, like, Buffalo Wild Wings, like, if I want to, like, you know, be cute and get, like, a really sugary alcohol drink and, like, act like I'm doing something, like, get some cheese curds or I don't
you
know.
You don't like the Coke Freestyle version?
You said so personally, like what, you build these things, nigga? Like,
he said the Coke Freestyle machine.
What you don't know is he's got stock in Coke. So he's like,
I don't. Thank you. I don't like it that much.
Sir, trying to
drinking this water.
Right. Learn to say Coca-Cola.
You still got cocaine in it.
Old school. Cheetah Girls or the Proud Family?
Ooh.
Oh, God.
Ooh, I have a follow-up to this.
Oh, that's like animated versus live-action.
Uh-huh.
Too.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Homie's pressed, for real. This is harder than the wings question.
It's like the opposite end of the spectrum.
I'm having a crisis right now.
To die with my question. And either way, I'm gonna feel like I'm betraying somebody.
Right. You know, I on a like by a hair, I'm going to say Proud Family, just because I would say there's not an episode of the Proud Family that I won't watch,
mm-hmm.
but I won't watch Cheetah Girls 3.
Fair point.
They took out Raven Simone. No, she actually Raven Simone was booked and busy, but
shout out Raven.
Hmm.
So have you watched the new Proud Family?
I haven't yet because I don't have Disney Plus.
Fair.
That $9.99 a month, you know, yeah,
it's no
point.
Don't,
don't,
don't
get me started. That'll be my next month's.
Right.
Don't get me started on fucking streaming services.
Man.
Again, you know, you asked me what keeps me going to be to afford $9.99 Disney Plus. Not have to blink.
Right. That's the level of comfort I'm trying to be. I'm there and I'm trying to give some of that shit back.
I know some people. Let me get you a password.
I know that.
We're taking care of homie.
Beyonce or Solange?
Ooh. Whoa!
In what? Like
either way, just pick between which one.
You gotta pick a Knowles.
Which of the Knowles sisters would it be?
you know, I'm
going to say Solange, because when I thought about it holistically, you know, they both have very great catalogs, like, you know, like they're truly sister catalogs. Mm-hmm. They're not the same. They both seem like personable people.
Solange is gonna fight for you.
Exactly. And I thought about it, you know, I'm one of those people when I'm at a party, like, who all gonna be there? I don't wanna hang out with Jay-Z. people do these this or that, like, would you rather take $1,000?
Dinner brunch or whatever they do?
You take $1,000 or a lunch with Jay-Z. Like, I'll take the five big box from Popeyes before a lunch with Jay-Z. Like, it's just, I don't know, like, the hair is just, it's just also like, Beyonce was like a child when they started dating. Right. Like,
no one ever talks about that fact.
But, you know, Solange, you
because
know,
he married her.
Right.
I can't completely avoid interactions with Jay-Z, being homies with Solange, but I feel like, you know, like, and she also just got divorced. So, like, there's really just, you know, no man in the picture.
Fair. Y'all trash.
And, like, she looked like she was having a great time with Tyler, the Creator, someone who I think would be a wild time with. So maybe I'll see Tyler, the Creator, too.
Oh, a little young boy.
You know, it seems like Solange is living more of the artist lifestyle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, where she's like, yeah, just out here doing some stuff, making some cool art, like, trying to find things to fight for and to be about, where, like, Beyonce is, like, is the brand. You know what I mean?
Like, I don't know why I, like, hesitated so long. Because, like, there's, like, a picture of Solange, like, literally over my bed. like, I don't know
why. Why you playing? Alan, why you playing?
It's a safe space.
The beehive can't hurt you here.
Like, I really did it this or that. I was like, I can afford a Beyonce poster or a Solange poster. So, like, I really did this, like, a year ago.
Written in the stars, homie. Written in the stars. All right, so we're going to move on to our final segment, the top three. Each one of our panel members will choose a song to add to our growing playlist. Of course, you can follow on Spotify if you're so inclined, and find the music that moves us. So get your playlist ready. Get your notebooks out. This is the top three. My first pick this episode. You know, I see a lot of shows. I go to a lot of shows. I work a lot of shows.
Okay.
And this song pops up in, not, I won't say all of them, but so many of them that it's almost uncomfortable. Today, I'm giving it out to I Want to Dance with Somebody by Whitney Houston. Mm. Everybody's been covering this song thinking they got rights to just try their hand at it, and that shit ain't working.
Is that the easiest Whitney song? Because it used to be like to prove you were talented,
no,
to somebody you could cover.
No, I don't think it's about ease. I think it's about wanting the diva rub without going for I Will Always Love You, because that's sacrilege.
Right.
But also, it's a crowd pop. People hear I Want to Dance with Somebody, they sing along, they feel it immediately.
You want to dance, say you want to dance.
Yeah. Everyone goes, everybody does that part. You know what I mean? Everybody does that shit. Yeah. We're just talking about it. We're all having these moments. And so they get to have a cheap pop out of their set by throwing that in there. I get it. Okay. But I want to give it to the OG.
I feel like that song's being gentrified, so I don't listen to it.
Fair. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. I gotta give it back to Whitney.
Gentrified. I feel like our Caucasian brothers and sisters took that song with them and ran with it. Mm. Especially our queer ones.
What if it was a ballad?
I don't know. Well, I mean,
no, that's how it starts. Same, what if it was a ballad?
That same kind exactly. Of
the acoustic cover, the coffee shop cover.
Yeah. And then, like, you got that same kind of thing with Sam Smith, and that's kind of how you got him to cross over to get, like, that kind of to get us into the market, because he did that cover of Whitney, and it was like, damn, this ain't bad.
Yeah. I think the only, like, Caucasity type covers that, like, you know, like, as I like. Remember, like, at the beginning of the pandemic when Megan Thee Stallion did that song Savage? I like that one white man on TikTok. He said, Carol Baskin. Killed her husband. Whacked him. Yeah. Like, I like that guy. Yeah. Like,
that's a good parody.
It's true. It's true. It's
true. Like that one's, like, safe. And, like, that's safe.
But a parody is different than a cover in the sense that it's like, go ahead, have fun.
Right.
Oh, yeah, because We're Not Yankovic. I love him.
Yeah. Oh, man, yeah.
I didn't see his biopic.
That man can do no wrong. His song's bop.
He has a biopic?
Yeah.
Starring Harry Potter as Weird Al.
Wow.
Facts.
Apparently, he got this up with Madonna and shit. Like, Weird Al apparently has had a wild-ass life.
He dated Madonna?
I don't know about dated.
Like a surgeon.
I mean, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, she used to sleep with Big Daddy Kane too. She was moving through.
She likes all types of flavors.
She's having fun. She was promiscuous, like Nelly Furtado.
Nelly Furtado.
I'm still saying the version that you left me on my voicemail, by the way, all those years ago.
Man, that was a classic time.
It really was. I was talking about that over the other day.
All right, who's going next?
We'll just go around the table. My first one's going to be Mango by Kamau featuring Adi Oasis. I don't know where I heard it. Probably was TikTok. That shit slaps. Listen to it. It's good.
Yeah. So Gwen Guthrie, her song, Ain't Nothing Going On But The Rent.
Yes!
Like, it's real in these streets. Yes, it's $4.89. Like, the cook just goes, you got to have a J-O-B.
That's right.
If you want to be with me. Like, what can you do for me? The bill collectors are here.
No romance.
Inflation is real. So
no
real.
No romance without finance.
Yeah. That's right.
I'm telling you.
But we all learned that lesson.
Like, I'm anti-capitalist, but these bills. That's my politics.
Right. But these bills. I am going to go with my first pick being Everybody Loves the Sunshine by Roy Ayers. It's summertime.
Yeah.
And you know, the last time we were probably around each other, I was talking about spring and being excited to be in Colorado and spend our time there, and just to be in that moment to have that sun. So Roy Ayers, this song always touches me when it gets to around this time of the year, because it's like, I want to do what I do, what I do, what I do, what I'm feeling in the sunshine. Yeah.
I'll be in the AC in the sunshine.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Playing PS5 in the sunshine.
Exactly. If you're looking
nice at my eyes, can't say where I. Yeah, you know, I love that one too. But I'd rather have it be the actual sunshine part, not the tinted shade, sadness, cocaine induced. We went through some drugs and alcohol. If you really would take the time to see that I'm suffering, you would understand that this record deal doesn't mean that much to me right now. Really, I'm still surviving where I'm currently standing now. That song is dark as fuck.
I'm looking forward to it.
But it's a motivational song, but it's dark as fuck.
Yeah.
Sad as hell.
Took some turns.
Yeah.
Definitely took some turns.
Yeah. It's like, how did you piece that together to make it that dark? Like, that song is like, where the Roy Ayers song is so bright.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mary J. Blige just like, was like, it's like in Freaknik when you see him drive into the hood and the dude like pulls up and shoots the sun and dies.
Yeah.
But it gives you that feel.
Terrabell.
Terrabell, Georgia. Terrible Terrabell.
So my next selection is a throwback. I'm gonna give it to Aaliyah. Are You That Somebody?
Ooh, there it is.
So funny.
I'm just saying.
Just looked at the Dr. Dolittle CD while I was at the thrift store.
That's the reason why it came up. Like, we're talking about Dr. Dolittle, and I was like, that
who
soundtrack.
Talks about Dr. Dolittle?
Shit just comes up, dog. Don't judge my life.
And don't judge the Eddie Murphy version.
I'm saying.
My family was just talking about Norbit, Eddie Murphy's worst movie.
No.
Worst.
Thank you.
Worst dress up movie, for sure.
No.
No. Also, no.
What one was the Norbit?
No.
This is a conversation for another time.
Yo, my guy. He played a Chinese dude.
Hold on to him.
Why is that impressive?
Right in the blue.
What?
Why is that impressive? He played a dude coming to America.
Right. What? No, you're doing apples to oranges, dog. Let's talk about Norbit or not. Don't bring up like, coming to America. No, talk about Norbit or not.
Talk
about Norbit or not.
Okay.
We'll
talk about it later.
Speaking of, what was that person that the lady who was in it? Mandy Newton.
Yeah, woo! Yeah.
You know, she was just talking about how she's like, I'm sorry to the dark skinned women to like for taking all your roles.
I'm
like,
yeah.
Like,
oh like, yeah.
You're apologizing for Norbit, ma'am. You're fine. I promise you, you're fine.
you should have Zoe Saldana apologize to you for taking all your money. That's accurate.
That's accurate. So yeah, Are You That Somebody, Aaliyah.
The baby sample.
Yeah. Yo, like it's such a great record. But it also makes me think of summertime because I remember going to see Dr. Dolittle when it came out.
I mean, the soundtrack is like,
yeah, it was a great soundtrack.
I bought that soundtrack on my way back from Georgia coming into seventh grade after being in Georgia for the summer, and that song playing crazy down south on the radio in Atlanta, and I could not for the life of me get my cousins to take me to the store to buy it. I begged and begged and begged and begged and begged and begged, but I could not get that CD at the time.
His soundtracks, like Beverly Hill Cop,
boom,
Dr. Dolittle,
boom,
Nutty Professor,
boom,
Boomerang,
wow, boom.
Nutty Professor one was a fire one.
It's true.
I'm saying.
I was just watching it yesterday.
Even the sequel, Janet Jackson gave us that bop. Yo. I was obsessed with that song and that little robot dog in the music video.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. I digress. Thank you, Eddie Murphy.
For real.
You had a great career. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to give it to Beyonce's sister and friends, and also in the band with your last song.
Solange's sister.
Solange's sister and friends. I'm giving it to Destiny's Child, Bills, Bills, Bills.
Hey, Bills, Bills, Bills.
Because, I mean, it's real out here. Like,
automobiles for the bar. Yeah,
it's true.
For real.
Automobiles.
Bills.
Yeah. Then maybe we can chill.
Maybe.
Because you can pay that bill and still get cut off. Because that's how you get a bugger boo.
You get that money, I got you. You get that money, I got you.
You know I pay that bill, right?
Well, guess I got to change my number.
Right? People. Right? New times. But yeah, that's my number two because it's real out here.
Facts.
Oof. Can you pay a bill?
I'm going to say the song by Greg O'Quinn and Joyful Noise, I Told the Storm. I would say it's maybe 00, but I think it's like 97, 98, 99. It pretty much says, you know, we in hella storms, like both like from a physical perspective and just life, COVID, gas, shootings, all these type of storms. And I just love the song as a motivational, just says, you can tell the storm to pass, it won't last, you know, a bill won't break you, a job won't make you. That's what I told the storm.
There you go.
Love it.
Fire.
Wow.
My second song is going to be Dragon Ball Durag by
I love that song.
Listen, I just be sneaking out on people and just be like, yo, come here real quick. I'll play the video just to fuck them up.
Yeah.
Just to fuck them up.
The video is ridiculous. I fucking love Thundercat, man. Yeah. Like, his song with Michael McDonald and fucking Kenny. Is it Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald?
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck thinks that that's the idea to do?
I mean, he's a legit musician.
Like, yeah, you know, which like, I love that.
Know your catalog. Yeah. That's what it comes down to. Because. Kenny and Michael both, they went in their day. Yeah. I keep forgetting.
Yeah.
Come on.
Facts.
Come on.
Facts.
Taking it to the streets.
Facts.
Taking it to the streets. I'm saying. Like. And Kenny Loggins, bro, when he hit soundtrack mode.
Yeah.
Like. That song he did for Caddyshack, I'm All Right.
Mm-hmm.
Dip, 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 dip. I'm All Right. Yo. He did not need to go that hard on that song, but he did.
True.
Top Gun? Come on now.
Top Gun wouldn't be Top Gun without
Kenny. That's one thing a single would
Danger Zone, period.
It doesn't matter what the gig was, they were going to give it their all.
That's right.
The Pointer Sisters, Sesame Street, whatever it was, a commercial, a Pepsi commercial.
Yeah.
You need me on the soundtrack? Let's go.
Yeah. You're paying me to give you this work.
Even Beyonce, when she used to like do these daytime performances on The View.
That's right.
Yeah. It didn't matter.
How many people go so hard on Good Morning America?
They don't have a choice. Because that's where you're selling it.
Yeah.
I looked forward to those because I used to have to go to my mom, the hairdresser, and they would always have Good Morning America.
That's right.
They had so many.
And these people was dancing their ass off at 7 o'clock in the morning. Like,
yes.
When did y'all even warm up? Like, I don't.
That's hard. It's hard work.
Be cold.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. December in the dead of New York City, in the winter.
Manhattan.
No. I can tell you, like,
now that I've had a taste of working those kind of gigs, mm-hmm. it's awful.
Yeah.
Because the sound ain't right.
Yeah.
Everyone's just making shit up.
You get more grace than Mariah Carey when she was lip syncing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's.
I get it.
Yeah. It's like jumping out of an airplane. It's just like, here you go. Thanks. You're on TV. Millions of people are watching. Good luck.
Have fun.
Bet. Okay.
Here we go.
How was it? Doesn't matter. It's already done.
I finished it. That's what matters. I finished it. Exactly. I finished it.
Right. Looks like mimosa I made time. It.
Right. Cocaine time. We started nice and early.
That's how they warm up so early. Red leather, yellow leather.
My last song for this playlist is going to be this banger called "The Gift of Life" by Alan Juno.
Ooh.
I gotta plug it. People need to hear this song. We gotta put it on the playlist. Like we can't have you here and then not celebrate the gift of life.
Indeed.
You know what I'm saying?
I'm still waiting. Like, even though I'm glad I wrote that song, I'm still waiting for like somebody's Christmas movie. We'll pick up Jingle Bell Groove.
Yeah, we working on it. Yo, I went to a little camping party this weekend, and I was just chilling. You know, we were cooking, hanging out, drinking, and some dude was just like, "Hey, I heard your Christmas album." I'm like, "Who are you?"
Santa?
Right? That's the dopeness of what this, you know, like people move in ways that you just don't expect. And so here we are. Like, I just met this dude and he's like, "Heard that Christmas album. It's great stuff." I'm like,
in the middle of the woods.
Right. In the middle of the woods in summertime. Mm. We talking Christmas music.
That's what's up.
That's what's up. Say, it moves in mysterious ways.
Fire.
Okay. For my last one, I got to give it to, it's the end of an era. Pusha T just dropped a newest album, a song called "Rock and Roll" with Kanye and Kid Cudi. And ooh. Kanye and Kid Cudi are no longer friends. And Cudi says that he's never going to make music with Kanye again. And I don't know how my house is going to get clean. Fuck, man.
So the backlog.
I know, and that's what it is. So the new song, "Rock and Roll," and it slaps. It's like, it's the end of an era, and the song is fucking dope. So that's going to be my number three, because, man, I'm sad to see Kanye being a fucking dinosaur, in the words of Cudi. And it hurts my heart. So.
We are not invincible to time.
Indeed.
I'll tell you that.
Indeed.
That's real. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say my third is "Black Truck" by Mariba. It's like a chill song, but it's like actually like really dope. As it says, I like it when she says, "They say I was pushing my luck, but I'm going to push me an all black truck." Just like in that kind of like that manifested like,
mm-hmm.
it's not luck. I'm just... it's gonna happen.
A truck is a great metaphor, though, too. You think about it, right? Because, like, the truck is the work vehicle.
Yep.
The truck carries the load.
Yep.
The truck has its inconveniences, but it's also got its, like, its purpose. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I to me, that metaphor seems really powerful.
It's a dope song. It's, like, real chill, but really good production. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, number three for me is going to come from Vince Staples. It's called "When Sparks Fly."
Okay, Vince Staples.
Yeah, his new album, "Ramona Park," broke my heart. I've been listening to Vince Staples like low key for a while now. And these last two albums have just hit home for me for some reason. Mm-hmm. And not only that, I think what really kind of turned me on to him to like just really get focused into him was his cave performance that he did with Kenny Beats.
Mm. Oh.
And he does this thing where like Kenny Beats walks in these artists and he does like a beat with them within like the first 15 minutes or whatever, and then they go in and they're like, they write a 16 or they do a track.
It's where Zach Fox's "I Got Depression" came from.
Yep.
Exactly. Right. And that's so right. Vince's is actually really extremely funny. But it's only going to click if you're a part. Well, not if you're a part, but if you can dialect gang culture to an extent where you know what they're talking about and it translates, then you'll understand why it's so funny.
Gotcha.
But Vince Staples is really funny. Like his attitude, the way he approaches things, how he says it, you can tell it's very natural that where he came from and his upbringing, like that shit is very to cold, to very tea, but it's so hilarious just the way that he drags Kenny Beats in the process. Like he's rushing him, he's telling him don't do certain things, and like he's fucking with him. It's so funny.
I love that real freestyle space.
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, we're processing this right now.
Yeah.
Someone bring you into like what's going, like that's where the dopest freestyles, when someone's like, yo, let me rap about the shoes, let me rap about the glasses, let me rap about the champion. Yeah. Like it's like be able to use all the material that's right there in front of you and make a moment. Like, what a great full circle thing to bring this whole conversation together.
Big facts.
You know. So of course, you know, everybody who's listening, this is a participatory process. So if you have suggestions, send them to us. Drop them in the comments. Things that we need to hear, let us know. Mm-hmm. We're always open ears. But of course, check out that that playlist on Spotify. You can check that out. We update it every episode. So you can hear all the bangers that we are obsessed with and have been obsessed with all season long.
Yeah.
So check that out. And of course, thank you so much for listening and watching Strictly For My Neighbors. You know how to find us. Share the word. Give us a follow. You know what to do. Of course, follow us on all the socials. You can find me at Emperor Madison Ray.
You can find me on Twitter at @thatguy_Rye. Just so you know, right now, it's all basketball. So
all basketball.
But the finals are over in like 2 weeks, and then I'll be back to talking shit. So.
You can find me on Twitter at Alan Juno. You can find me on Instagram at Alan.Juno.
Wait, was there another Alan Juno? Is that where you have to put the dot in that one?
Oh, a dot, yeah.
Oh, shit, we got to find this person.
Exactly.
Instagram's dirty like that. It's like my IG is @thatguy_Rye_IG because apparently there's another That Guy Rye, and I'm like, fuck you, bro.
No, there's not.
Exactly.
No, there's right. not.
No. You know, it's me, your boy, Dano B. Picasso, across all platforms. Find me. Simple. Or, you know, I'm chilling. I'll be doing shit on them anyway, to be honest with you. Like, I haven't got to like that old uncle status where I would like start in on something. I can't stay on Twitter too long. I start scrolling and then I go into somebody's thread and start listening to how all the other people are judging them. And I get out of there. I don't stay on Instagram too long because
bro, protect your peace.
Instagram is hell.
That's right.
I mean, it's a nice place, but it's hell. But it's like, I don't, you know, I enjoy seeing people like maintaining or doing things that they want to do in life. But then, yeah, I also don't want to fall short into people that are like playing this shit because they're like, yo, we can keep this up. And so I'll chill on them for a while too. And then Facebook, of course, is like,
that's hell.
Yeah.
That's like hate. That's Hades. Yeah. It's like under hell.
All these people
like,
falling for fish and scams.
Get that
like,
premium.
Get that premium LinkedIn.
I'm not paying for it. Nope.
Nope.
MySpace still exists. I'll go back. I'll go back to MySpace before I pay for LinkedIn.
Be like Kelly Rowland getting Excel or something because it's
bringing back two-way pagers and shit. No thanks.
So thanks for listening to Strictly For My Neighbors. Thank you, Alan Juno, for joining us as our special guest. You know where to find us.
Oh, same black time?
Same black channel. You dig?
We'll catch you next time.